Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Jeremy Thursday morning as he brings you the headliner's balls. And Friday, join Pam with Break On Through. Saturday, join the Faziana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And every other Sunday, join Robert as he brings you the solace of shadows. These shows are designed so that you can come outside the lines with rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Rand. I can't wait to get into and read your words. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Rex. How's it going?
I'm just wondering if Jeremy was listening into that opening, because I kind of muffed that one.
Well, you know what? If he is listening and he has a complaint, he can, you know, give it to the complaint department.
It kind of pegs. I hope he doesn't have two women on this week, because then it kind of, yeah, you got that one wrong really bad.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, right? Oh, my gosh. Too funny. But, it looks like a great lineup of poetry tonight. I tell you, I always love that intro song. It gets me moving and grooving, and that ending always makes me bang a gong and get it on. Good stuff.
Well, let's kick it into gear.
All right, sounds good. I'll go ahead. And I'll bring on a guest, and here we go. Welcome, Felon. Glad you could join us. How's it going?
I'm tired, but I'm going to be here for a few minutes, not long.
Okay. I do have an intro poem I want to have read, and then we'll put your poem after the intro poem.
Oh, absolutely. Not a problem.
All right. Very cool. All right. You ready, Rex?
Sure. I like our ganache. Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. Don't watch
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, me too. We've got some really fun writes tonight. All right. So up first is the intro poem we have, More About People by Ogden Nash. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. More About People by Ogden Nash. When people aren't asking questions, they're making suggestions. And when they're not doing one of those, they're either looking over your shoulder or stepping on your toes. And then, as if that weren't enough to annoy you, they employ you. Anybody at leisure incurs everybody's displeasure. It seems to be very irking to people at work to see other people not working. So they tell you that work is wonderful medicine. Just look at Firestone and Ford and Edison. And they let you till they're out of breath or something, and then if you don't succumb, they starve you to death or something. All of which results in a nasty quirk, that if you don't want to work, you have to work to earn enough money so that you don't have to work. End poem.
Great read there, Rex.
Yeah, but, well, like it says, it's quirky. Rolls right down to that nasty quirk of, I don't want to work, but if I have to make money so I don't have to work, what's the point to begin with?
Exactly. Well, you know, one of the things I like about Ogden Nash is how he uses humor to get points across about society. And there's definitely a biting tone of sardonic to those end lines, which was actually one of our prompts that we used. And I really like about how this makes that social commentary on you know, people and not minding their own business, especially in the beginning. And I also really like the lines of, so they tell you that work is wonderful medicine. Just look at Firestone and Ford and Edison, and they lecture you till they're out of breath or something. And then if you don't succumb, they starve you to death or something. So, you know, just a clever, fun write. And, yeah. What do you think, Felon?
I like the same answer that you liked, you know, wonderful medicine, just like, just look at Firestone, Ford, and Edison, because usually those were small mill towns, or, you know, they made up, the people that lived there actually worked at the mill. If not, they worked something that they owned, so that kind of ties in with, you know, you better be good at something if you don't want to work, but you want to have money. So you better own something in the town, or not, you're screwed. You ain't gonna have nothing. So I think this is pretty clever and very, very surreal, in a humorous
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. You know, and that's just as bad, if not worse, in small towns as it is big cities. Like the small town I grew up in, we had like basically one family that controlled the whole town.
Wow.
You know. So.
It's about like, oh, what was it? Twin Peaks out in, what was it, Oregon or Washington?
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right. And Felon, I've gone ahead and put up your poem, so
okay.
Go ahead and give it for us.
Let's see. I'm not very happy with my write, so I'm just going to go ahead and take it now. I don't really like it too much, but it's called Just Let Them Be, and the prompt was 7. Life is not being told. The man has just waxed the floors. And it goes like this. Days are marked to doubling in nights. A creative mind sleeps away the day and time. A slow fade to dark wakes the inner arc. Scolding oneself tonight. Lights out at 12, midnight chimes the day in. That's when excuses allows promises to cave in. An Amazon order delivered groceries and household necessities settles in on the debate on being up so late. Bill pay removes responsibility to functioning during the day. No man's best friend or even a goldfish. Just supported thoughts shared without any small talk. Recluse webbed in just 4 rooms, though remain glued to just 1. Escape from self-made prison comes from checking the mail. Making the break is when others have tuned in for the day. Keys in hand to a slow elevator ride to the lobby. Admiring the shine to the floor when concierge advised, hey, you just waxed the floor. Catching your reflection in the entryway mirror. This is what others see, a body to no life. Ghost to a domain existing, never hearing your name. Life is not being told. The man has just waxed the floors. End poem.
Great read, Bill. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, first of all, great read there. And I thought this was an excellent write. You know, I think we're always our own worst critic as far as anything goes, but especially our poetry. You know, this was great take on the prompt, which was life is not being told. The man has just waxed the floor. And I like that the main message that I get from this is the idea of how everything about life just hits really hard in the middle of the night. I also like that you have very relatable imagery and metaphors like this. Like you brought this into you brought this into a more modern time where, you know, whereas in the poem that we just read, you know, there's the mention of Edison and Ford and, you know, the bygone eras. And here you mentioned an Amazon order to deliver groceries and household necessities settles the debate of being up so late. Bill pay removes responsibilities of functioning during the day. You know, I like that because I think it's so relatable. Oftentimes, you know, when we struggle to sleep because we have so much on our mind or we're just struggling in the middle of the night, we need those to give ourselves those reasons why we're awake, those reasons that we're wasting away in those nighttime hours as emotionally. I also really like the lines of no man's best friend or goldfish, just supported thoughts shared without any small talk, recluse web to just four rooms, though remain glued to just one. And I like that the idea that the remain glued to just one actually makes me think of two things. The idea of spending all your time in one room, but the idea mm-hmm. of that one room is like a chat room, like spending it online, you know. And I just really thought this is a clever write. As I said, I don't think you give yourself enough credit. And it's very intelligent.
Well, thank you, Pam.
Yeah, it's very intelligent in the way it makes, you know, it looks at the life of somebody who's physically and emotionally struggling to get through. And of course, as always, you just wrap it up so nicely by tying in the prompt. So very cool and very well.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well said, Ben. I'm going to look at this a little differently.
Let's go, mind reader.
All right. Although this might walk along that note of somebody who fears the daytime hours and the confluence of people, I'm guessing the best work that comes out of this individual is those nighttime hours. And he understands that, yes. Still kind of has to make note of certain things, like the delivery by Amazon, yet still doesn't have to be up to go out. Can actually have it noted when the delivery is going to be coming in. So you still got the doorman, which you note down at the bottom end, which is the one person it does come across in this, and that seems to be enough because you've got also no man's best friend or goldfish, just supported thoughts shared without any small talk. So there isn't any real reason for small talk with this person. He might be that one individual where they're extremely introverted, and the best of what comes for them comes when it does, and usually that's at night, even though that they, hey, I got to go to bed by midnight because this or that. But since you already got everything set up on bill pay, there isn't a real reason to do that. Even for the thought of coming to down to the mailbox, it's done at night. Extremely late at night, because that's when the man does the waxing of the floors. Hence the thought with the doorman offering up, hey, be careful, they just wax the floor. There's no he doesn't mind this life. It's convenient. It works within itself, and the four rooms are a living room, dining room, bedroom, and maybe a the lesser room being that one they spend their time in. That's where they've got their books, where they might have their computer, where they've got their whatever material they're using as a connection to the outside world that they do not have to visit, literally and figuratively. So that's the best I can do.
That's pretty good. Basically, it's when I was working on the rescue, and, you know, I'd work 24-hour shifts, and you should know this, Rex, I would sleep all day and then be up all night. And this is just totally me because, I mean, I would just sneak say, God, I hope nobody sees me without my makeup and my hair not done. So I would just wait till everybody with the bed. And
when you do those crazy jobs,
I wasn't brushing my hair. I wasn't doing anything. I didn't care if I matched or anything. I just went downstairs to get my mail, and they're like, hey, you know. But and I did have Amazon deliver my stuff, but this is sort of a reflection of myself. I guess I was telling on myself, and I'd always sit in my bedroom that was kind of, it was like a loft area, but you could see the rest of the house. But just sit right at the center there and basically be up all night doing a whole lot of nothing and sleep all day. So, yeah.
I work graveyard, so I know that. When you work graveyard,
I know you know that.
You do sleep during the day, because, and actually that's peaceful there too, because everybody in the apartment building or around you, they've already gone to work. So there is that essence of understand, oh yes, no noises, no thrills, no happenstance to, oh, the neighbor's banging on the door because they need a cup of sugar.
Everybody's
or they're beating each other up outside.
Or right, especially in Atlanta.
All the kids yelling because they're at school.
And now I have to work during the day, so I have to do the daytime hours, and I'm not liking it, not at all.
It'll take you off on that, too. It'll take you a while to adjust.
It is. I wanted to come and read it and at least support. I'll stay for a couple more poems for you guys.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Life Like a Slip and Slide by Darkened Auras. And it goes like this. Life is full of twists and turns, a rope once born that starts to burn. Life's never just an easy glide. It's far more like a slip and slide. As if the floor has just been waxed. You weren't told because you never asked. Blind to obstacles that are in your way, feeling your way through day, just day by day. How many times will you face plant? How often will you feel small as an ant? A tiny speck in a great big world, waiting to see what will be unfurled. Will you give up on life because you fall so much? Or will you cling tight to your own life's crutch? End poem.
Gregory, Pam, thank you very much. And all right, so what do you think?
Okay, let's see. First off, life is full of twists and turns and a rope once born that starts to burn. To me, it's like it's basically, you know that the floor is waxed and it's roped off, but yet you're still going to cross that rope. You're like, shit, I'm doing it anyway. And knowing you're going to fall flat on your face, and it doesn't matter how many times, you keep going, falling over and over and over, you still just keep getting crossing that rope and slipping and sliding. And it's like, you know what? Oh, well, I guess I'll do it. To the point, it doesn't matter. The way it says blind to obstacles. They're not blind to the obstacle. They're well aware of what's going on. They're just blind to they're blind to their stupidity. That's how I see it. Because, I mean, I'm only going to face plant one time, and that's it. I'm not doing it again. Believe me. A tiny speck in the great big world. And I think that it's more of a metaphor of that, everything's still nice and shiny, but yet they keep sliding on that shiny floor because they hadn't learned how to stand on something that polished at that time. So that's what I gather from it. Great, right?
Excellent. Thank you, Phil. All right, Pam, you got to read it. What about you?
Yeah, this is wonderful rhyming couplets. I like how she brings in the slip and slide, because, man, I remember that thing, and, boy, it was fun, but it hurt at the same time. And I think that's a perfect metaphor for life. Fun, but it hurts at the same time. I really like how this speaks to the idea. Like, I feel like it's an answer prompt because, the prompt being life is not being told, a man has just waxed the floor. And instead of saying, you know what, it's all the man who didn't tell you fault, this is saying, well, you know what, as the one that stands it says, blind to obstacles that are in your way, feeling your way through just day by day. It's like the whole idea of you need to start paying attention to what's going on around you. You have to take some responsibility for yourself. And I like the end stanza also, which says, will you give up on life because you fall so much, or will you cling tight to your own life's crutch? The idea of, trying not to constantly lean on other people or blame other people, but rather stand up for yourself. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh, I can walk that way too, yeah. But I'm going to take a little different tack. I like the thought in the first two lines. Life is full of twists and turns. A rope once born that starts to burn. So she's offering up that thought of life is full of twists and turns because at the moment of birth, you don't know that. You're just that little thing all in a row. So this kind of hits on that note of what you do from birth on, but it also pegs the notion of what happens as that little baby to the toddler to the to the preschool and onward that you learn, and then you only learn by face planting. But you don't, how many times do you not take that forward in life past your teenage years when all of a sudden you think you know everything and, that shit will never happen to me. But it does. So the idea being, hey, what you learned early, you're still not applying mid. And then that after that, it's all on you because you didn't take the notions of what you learned in the first place as you kept falling when you learned to walk, as you kept bumping into things because you didn't realize there was something about them that they would hurt you until you actually did that. But then by the time you get into your teenage years and your 20s, that kind of goes away because you think you're thinking differently. And then the bottom end of this would, will you give up on life because you fall so much, or will you cling tight to your own life's crutch? The life as you hit on, Panda, blaming other people or not owning up to your own mistakes and taking responsibility for your own actions. So you learn early, but it's not a professed thought of moving forward unless you actually remember.
I like that, Rex. I like that idea of when you move forward, you have to keep putting what you learn into practice. So very cool.
All right.
Up next, we have Death of a Conscience by Diamond Dave. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read, please.
Death of a Conscience by Diamond Dave. I used to have a conscience, but it brought me too much shame. I'd get a pain down in my gut. Those values were to blame. When I did it wrong, that little voice of guilt began to speak. I listened as I had no choice. My will was pretty weak. I knew I had to find a way to shut my morals down. Now I'm a different man today, a sinner of renown. I read up on religion, and I saw it was a fraud. Compunction had no legs to stand if man created God. That killed my conscience then and there. Things haven't been the same all since the day I ceased to care and banished guilt and shame. And Dave took, there's only one way to find happiness on this terrestrial ball, and that is to have a clear conscience or none at all. All right, Pam, what do you think?
As always, Diamond Dave, I know, he keeps changing his name. He used to be Dammit Dave, now he's Diamond Dave. Very cool. Spot on rhyme and flow, a great take on the prompt. You know, I think he captured the vibe of the prompt very well, and the idea that a conscience hurts. You know, being a nice person hurts. And he especially does that in the first stanza. I used to have a conscience, but it brought me too much shame. I'd get a pain down in my gut. Those values were to blame. I also like how this keeps kind of getting darker and darker, like a sinner of renown. Compunction has no legs to stand on if man created God. And then to the point of ceasing to care completely. Like, there's something about rhyme that sometimes makes poetry lighthearted for me anyways, but in here you can kind of see almost a downward spiral of someone going more and more into that realm of not caring at all. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And so what about you?
I think Dammit Dave's going to go to hell if he don't watch it, for one. I mean, you know, God don't like, you know, those, the function of those legs and morals ain't going to matter if he has them or not, because swimming in the lakes of hell, he ain't going to need them. He can just float, keep floating around, because you cannot have a conscience at the end of the day when it's all said and done, when we're called home or our next chapter. You better have had a conscience, because that's when everything comes to light. And you might not feel no guilt and shame at this moment, but you're going to feel it later. I guarantee you that. But I think this is a wonderful capture of the actual prompt in itself, and that how we do go with gut feelings, or we have morals and we have values, and you know, we stand true to those convictions. But then there's some that just don't. They just don't give a shit, and they just do whatever they want to do, and don't care who they hurt. And sometimes I wish I could have that. I wish I could just not have a conscience and no morals or values. But it's just not in me. I mean, I might have a smart mouth, but I'm, you know, I have a big heart. But sometimes I wish I could just get that for a day or two and just go do some house calls. But yeah, this is pretty good. Damn it, Dave, Diamond Dave, whatever you want to call it, Dave.
Absolutely.
DD, how about that?
yeah, those first two stanzas hit on that note of being taught about something, yet there's a niggling note of kind of pessimism in it. That little voice of God began to speak. My will was pretty weak. It kind of offers up a short-sightedness in the moment. Then that third stanza walks into that ideal of, hey, I can shut it down. Now I'm a different man today, a sinner of renown. Hits on that notation. Since you don't have a conscience now, all of a sudden you're apathetic to all things except that which rolls within oneself. And if that is that's kind of the birth of a psychopathy. Then that angle of, I've read of religion, a soul was a floor, compunction had no legs to stand if man created God. But up top, you kind of get that impression that there was some spirituality within to begin with until he got up to reading it up on religion and should have leveled out with what he already knew, not got into the reality behind things and see the reality that's born upon the stage, so to speak, with these people with huge audiences demanding money. That kind of sent you on a different path itself. That killed my conscience then and there. Things haven't been the same all since the day I ceased to care and banished guilt and shame. That kind of rolls right back down to the opening stanza as far as all of a sudden things aren't the same. Not only aren't the same, they don't walk in the same shoes, and I am not that person, although I have embalmed myself within that, which kind of notes the fact that there's still some spirituality left, but it should have been left with the small opening, that which one believes in as opposed to that which is drilled into you. All right, Pam, we're coming back to you.
All right. All right, well, since someone says she is going to last but one more poem, then we will put her to work. I have put up Quietly Quitting by Way Down Upon Joy. And Felon, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All righty. This is by Way Down Upon Joy, Quietly Quitting. All right, here we go. If work is the way you get by and your choice for the future to come, I suggest just resist, hew, and cry quietly, work to become. A person that soon will acquire with a never need to conspire. A sure proof of succeed, you'll have what you need for the life once dreamed, then retire. If quitting the way to move on, work hard with that goal kept in mind. It takes a resolve called upon its peers to seem and jeer, to cheer, disinclined. It's quietly quitting, obscured by the fact that you just don't share a word. You'll have to last laugh, earning time and a half, till you wave as you leave them, assured. That's my kind of people, and poem.
Great read, Paul. Thank you very much. It's a bit of fun in this one. And Pam, what do you got?
Oh, I always enjoy Way Down Upon Joy's poetry. You know, she's a very talented rhyming poet. Well, just a very talented poet. I particularly like that she has two stanzas of 9 lines each, and I'm wondering if this is a specific form, you know. But I don't see that. She wrote to the prompt number 2. If you don't want to work, you have to work hard enough to earn enough money not to work. And you know what I like about this is this is some good old common sense put into poetry. If you want to, you know, acquire what's your dreams, if you want to succeed, then just move forward work hard, you know, until you retire. And, you know, it's just, it's like I said, good old common sense, great rhyme and flow. I particularly like where it says, if quitting is the way to move on, work hard with that goal kept in mind. It takes a resolve called upon, it piercing to jeer, disinclined. You know, I like the idea of, you know, do what makes you happy no matter what everybody else thinks. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Sal, since you got to read it.
To me, it kind of reminds you, if you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. I think that's a lie because I love doing what I do, but I mean, I work. But I think this is just basically just keep your nose to the grind, keep to yourself. Don't bring any drama to you because then it's going to be a smooth sail. You know, it's almost like you're sitting there in that little recliner or lounge chair and drinking a beer and it's just watching all these other fools like fighting or whatever, but you just do your thing. Keep your nose, you know, down and just keep going. And before you know it, it's going to be over. And if you have a chance to do some overtime, go ahead and you know, pocket that. But I think this is just an absolutely very, for one, the cadence, and it's impeccable. I like it a lot. It was easy to read it if I wasn't so sleepy, and I apologize. But, yeah, really enjoyed it a great deal.
Don't apologize because you crawled into my head and took everything I was about to say and took it for your own. So I hate you.
Sorry.
No, you did. You got the point that I was going with. If you love what you do, you never work in a day in your life. Because there is a note to happiness in that. And this comes with this because she dropped in a little bit of fun and humor in with it. So that is the point. If you enjoy what you're doing, you know what? It's an easy task to, and you don't mind that time and a half because, hey, that's just a little quicker motif to where I'm going.
I wouldn't be quietly when I was waving by. I'd be saying some ugly words, probably. Yeah, I would.
Kiss my lily white ass. I'm retiring.
Right, the middle finger. Hey, you know what? You're number one. Peace out. Yeah. Yeah. But I must say goodnight because I got to work again tomorrow. And my first time back in quite some time. Today was my first day, so it went pretty smooth. So I just wanted a great show, and sorry, guys, but I have got to go.
Oh, no problem, Phil. Thanks for dropping in.
All right, y'all have a good show, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, bye. All right, Pam.
All right. Up next, we have Paper Birds versus Paper Nooses by Duncan Ross Bell, and it goes like this. Paper birds stained red, smudged paper feathers, solemn paper path, a bath for perdition, the sinners, killers, and wrath, an open mind for the moment, a blind eye to all else. Instinct is extinct, all the fumbles are saved, more letters for new words, death is a video. Your tube needs the likes, slit throats for lunch quotes, be a bully for the game, use fame to beat a bully, use shame to recap the pain. The flame is in the blunder, asunder in the blown, clone the cunts who made you, make gods of those you blame. Paper birds, misery fed, smudged paper visions, paper nooses, and a solemn paper bath. And poem.
Great read, Pam. It hits on the notion of giving more credence to those for who and what they are. When, hey, if you don't give them the paper, you know what? Pretty soon they go away because they're not in it. Use shame to recap the pain. The flame is in the blunder. Asunder is the blown. Clone the cunts that made you, and make gods of those you blame. There is that notion, the more print, so to speak, that you give someone or something, you lionize it. It becomes something iconic in the moment when it should be something that that eventually dies in its own due time if you don't give it that much more clout by running your mouths. So it kind of hits on those notions of the paper birds and paper nooses, the paper birds being those who put out their notes to what is, what isn't, and what reality, when all they should be doing is popping out the truth to begin with. Like this one, a bashful perdition, the sinners, killers, and wrath, an open mind for the moment, a blind eye to all else. Now, yeah, blind eye to all else. You just take up that note of what you're being told as opposed to actually digging in to your own mind. Instead of believing, do your own investigation. And then you should boil down to clarity of thought and discernment of your own mentality instead of someone else's. Because everybody's capable of thought. It's just a matter of application. A lot of people are too easily swayed with just a singular blurb instead of actually reading the whole story. But I think that's where the paper nooses come in. It's like you get hung on your own petard.
I like that. And I think you make a really good point there, Rex, about how people are too easily led by a singularity of thought and need to, you know, kind of learn to you know, think for themselves. I like how he delves into a lot of different paper forms here, not only the paper birds, but the paper path and the even the paper bath, I thought was a really good line because, you know, the when you think about paper getting wet, it doesn't hold anything, you know, so something, it's like basically the thought of an idea. A thought that doesn't hold any weight, an opinion that doesn't hold any weight. I thought he had some really hard-hitting and visceral lines, especially in Split Throats for Lunch quotes, be a bully for the game, use fame to beat a bully, use shame to recap the pain. And what I like about those lines is it speaks to me on the whole idea that we eventually become what we hate if we continue to act like people that, play these kind of cruel games. I also like the mention of YouTube. Death is a video. YouTube needs the likes. That really speaks well on the whole idea of what we'll do, people will do for 15 minutes of fame. And I think that's really what makes our society nothing but paper just falling apart. And if you look at paper as almost like a metaphor, is the idea that we depend too much on that temporary high of that 15 minutes of fame. So excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, Willy Wonka's wet dreams. All chocolate in the moment when the news is just shit.
Absolutely. I like that. Willy Wonka's wet dreams. Licking the wallpaper. All right.
Back in the day, that used to contain a lot of iron and arsenic.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, shoot, up until recently, you know, they're like, you had old, you still have old houses with lead paint in them, you know.
If you wanted to get the poison and you didn't want to go to the store, hey, buy the old-fashioned fly traps, those dangling little strips of paper coated. Boil it down. Hey, there's a lot of arsenic to be had in there.
Oh, right. Right. Yep. That is true. I remember we did a dark show about that with the two old ladies poisoned people by dipping fly paper in the tea.
Yeah, that's too long. You got to boil it down to get the good stuff.
All right. Well, up next we have Extinction Sea by Pee Wee Cousin and Rex. go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Extinction Sea by Peter Guzman. Skyscrapers reaching clear up to God. Flying droids rode by intelligent robots. Final integration of extinction plans becomes known to the race of man. Steeped in substandard mediocrity, setting stale for Extinction Sea, deoxyribonucleic mistakes the machines must annihilate. Primordial ooze from our creations drips like international perspiration, socially stuttering and completely inept, substandard subhuman pieces of shit. Entranced by ignorance once again, superficial sublimation of the old sins, the mannequin's malevolent ghost wraps his strings around our throat. Annihilation wears erratic eyes, calls your name, and it's time to die. Formerly known as fickle fate, fingers and throat she regurgitates. Doesn't matter how hard she choked him, can't unbreak what was already broken. Honey-like ooze drips from her chin, feasts on remnants of what had been. She stays to clean up her plates. Take your ass in hand, it's time to pray. Hold it close for when judgment shits, and remember that you asked for this. Unbridled, homicidal, electric lights illuminate our path into endless night. Erasion of civilization, a primary disease. Going sailing on. I'm where you want to start.
All right. Great read there, Rex. Boy, I noticed between yesterday's show and this one, I shouldn't say yesterday, but Sunday's Rhythm and Rhyme show and this one, Pee-wee certainly has been enjoying floating around on the sea. I like the rhyme and flow in this. I like how it's kind of got some dark, twisted humor. The first line is a combination. It's almost like somebody took and combined the story of the Tower of Babel into a sci-fi right. Skyscrapers reaching clear up to God, flying droids rolled by intelligent robots, final integration of extinction plans becomes known to the race of man. I like the idea of building the skyscrapers, building the towers and gaining too much knowledge and to the point where it no longer helps us. I also like the whole message of, you know, karma's a bitch and the personification of fate. I thought this was a great take on the prompt. Progress might have been all right once, but it's gone on too long. I really particularly liked the line, annihilation wears erratic eyes, calls your name and it's time to die, formerly known as fickle fate, fingers and throat she regurgitates. Doesn't matter how hard she's choking, can't unbreak what was already broken. Honey-like ooze drips from her chin, feasts on remnants of what had been. The idea of feasting on remnants of what was once humanity and is now becoming nothing more than a combination between robots and primordial ooze. Excellent write and very well done.
Thank you. Oh, there's two stories going up on here. You look at those first three stanzas, they hit on that idea. Let's see where we go. Intelligent robots, your thoughts of the Tower of Babel, skyscrapers, yes. But you got intelligent robots, extinction plans, race of man, substandard mediocrity, extinction sea, deoxyribonucleic mistakes, machines must annihilate. That hits me up with the thought to, what was it, Skynet, and out of that Terminator movie. You got to replace, we got to the point where we actually make the artificial intelligence. Then the artificial intelligence moves into the realm of we must correct that which is the mistake, that being humanity. Because socially stuttering, completely inept, substandard, subhuman piece of shit. Because we don't walk within the same path of AI because it is a singularity that supposedly has utterly no thoughts, no feelings other than perfection, because it's supposed to be born of perfection. But you, unrealizingly, it knows not that it is not perfect either, because it does not have that sense of soul and morality that should, that will give it a node to what it should be instead of what it is actually devising in and of itself. And it hits on what else is this fickle fate, fingers and throat she regurgitates. I like that. I remember back in the 60s, we used to have a show. It's called Rowan and Martin's Laughing. And each week, they give out an award. It was called the Flying Fickle Finger of Fate Award. And it was just a bronze statue with one finger pointing out. And that was your award for the stupidest thing of the week, so to speak. And it doesn't matter how hard she is choking, can't upbraid what was already broken. Honey, like loose drifts from her chin, feast on remnants of what had been. Kind of hits on the notion of the last gasping derivatives of humanity. Then that judgment shifts. Remember, you asked for this. It all comes back to that point. If you are going to build those towers to God, yet you don't understand God, and you want to be God-like, then remember, you created it. If it bites you in the ass, it's your own fault.
That is a really good point there, and I like that, too. That if you want to play God, you're going to have to accept that your creation will bite you in the ass. That could actually be a prompt for a contest.
Well, it's also what, what's her name thought about when she wrote Frankenstein, because it had a different full title.
Oh, Mary Shelley, yes.
It concerned the imperiality, superiority of man thinking that he can create life. And boy, little did she know, but she hinted at what might. And since there are test tube babies and there are other things, they clone sheep, they're cloning cattle right now. That's mostly what everybody is eating these days, cloned beef.
Yep. Yep, and the fact that she came up with that story when she was about 18 or 19 years old, and it has made such an impact on the literary world, is just always, to me, just amazing. We got to do another Mary Shelley show sometime.
Yeah.
All right. So up next, we have City Children Can't Play by Grant G, and it goes like this. Every little space left in cities builders build upon, no consideration for children to play or grow on. Parks disappear except for squares of concrete cage. What is it we can't see about this progressive age? Crimes on the rise, drugs, guns, and gangs fill in our demise. Hardship and poverty stand before everyone's eyes. Education seems harder when most kids think it's fake, for there ain't many jobs no matter career path they take. End poem.
Great weekend. Thank you very much. And Grant took, number three. Progress might have been okay once, but it's gone on too long. Yes, big cities. There is that note to big cities, which most people don't take a look at now. It's easy using a big city, getting the congealed morass inside as putting forth all those minds and material together. They don't create anything. Not really. The creation comes from the outside. It doesn't come from inside the big cities. Look at the ideas. Big cities don't exist without being fed. And they don't grow their own food. They don't feed their own livestock. All of that comes from outside the cities. It is one thing. There can be some great motifs for that. But within every great motif, the back end, the dark underbelly of that reality is there is more disgruntled and hopeless people in big cities because they're the outliers. They're the ones that go to shit schools. They're the ones with the guns, the drugs, and the gangs on the streets because nobody wants to do anything about it. They're happy with the fact that there's enough detritus being swept away each and every day that they know they'll have newbies moving in. And that's always the plus. Big city design for one thing. They're killing machines. They are that big monster where you go to die, literally, unless you're sitting within one of those ivory towers. Well, nicely done.
Amen.
Yeah.
You know, your comment about how, you know, it's the farmers and the ranchers and, you know, like not that you said farmers ranchers, but, you know, the people who grow and raise the food that support everybody made me think about this article I read today. I was reading this article, well, it wasn't really an article, but it was just like a fun article on, you know, stupid things that people say on the internet. And there was this one person who had posted a comment on a social media site that said, "I don't eat chicken eggs. I eat eggs from the supermarket."
Yes. Because ignorance is the blossom of that which you have on the top of your head, your ass. People think, hey, I get milk from the store. Do you know where the milk comes from? Yeah, the store.
Yeah.
Imbecility breeds on itself.
Exactly. But, you know, as far as Grant's poem goes, I really like it. I think that was a perfect prompt for him to write to. And he took a very socially aware approach to the prompt. Oftentimes you'll see Grant writing about inner city life. And, you know, I think if he hasn't already, he needs to put together a book of his poetry and title it something like, you know, like Urban Landscapes or Urbanology or something like that, you know, because he's got so many wonderful writes that really focus on the issues that hit the urban areas of many countries. And I really like this brevity. It's got some strong lines. I especially like how the beginning talks about how people are more concerned about what's happening to them right here in the present rather than future generations, rather than making sure that children feel secure and happy and can grow up confident. And I also like with the end line, our education seems harder when most kids think it's fake, for there ain't many job no matter career path they take. And I think that, you know, to be honest, I don't think that's just children. You know, I think a lot of young adults and adults have gotten, you know, in life, grown up in life and realized that, you know, it's just not easy. It is not easy. There is not a whole lot of opportunities out there necessarily, especially because it's just a system fostered by greed. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said, Dan. And Hatch has got one hell of a view.
Wow, let's see here. Oh, my goodness gracious. Look at that. That is beautiful. Thank you for sharing that picture, Hat. That is. I'm trying to remember where. Is it Slovakia that Hat is from? I know she'll answer that question.
Even within this particular arena, you've got a nice, fair amount of greenery, which helps.
Yeah.
And if you've got something like New York, you've got Central Park, but there's not much else. There needs to be something that offers some rain of freedom, which means the you get to see something of nature even within the city. I mean, look at I think it's Amsterdam, where you've got all the canals that walk around the city itself. You got the little boats, canal boats. That is something of actually offering up both ends and still getting a little bit more of the natural environment instead of nothing but bleeding concrete that actually makes the city a whole hell of a lot warmer.
Oh, definitely. And that's important. It's important for, for communities to have connection with nature and with greenery, so absolutely. All right.
So that kickoff is up real birds, not pigeons shitting all over you every day.
Oh, my gosh, right? Yeah. That doesn't happen. That happens definitely more in the city than it does in the country. All right. Well, up next we have Histrionics of Mechanics by Eric Svensson. And Rex, you're going to have to go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
All right. The Histrionics of Mechanics by Eric Svensson. Many moons ago, when time was slow, I met these fine fellows, buffed bronze, they minted time. Buffety-uppity tram ridle, griddle guide, shimmy-shake city by the bay, foggy day in San Fran town. Bronze encased, passion pulsed, monument to mechanics, quandary foundry, alchemized blood, sweat, and tears. Socrates materialized next to me, where I admired such buffed bronze devotion. Dandy doppelganger, he always pounces on me when least expected. Anthony Hopkins lookalike, he cleared his throat. I see you're still learning, student. More like observing the merits of hard work. Then a busker close by caught my attention. Happy, Dizzy Gillespie kind of fellow. One-man band, extraordinaire. A well-traveled fedora on the asphalt, cordially invited dollars, dimes, even pennies. Suave smile, mechanics, smite histrionics. Traveling histrionics of mechanics. Great American tour back in 94. Big-hearted folks opened their doors. Miami, Houston, on to San Francisco. Mighty Mojo Plymouth, board in Sacramento. Road-tripping Redwoods, Old Faithful Radiator, Geyser Blue outside Memphis. Socrates became Plato. What is your industry, young man? Hot, heated August night at truck stop. Defining my passion, I guess. Ever read Khalil Gibran? Greasy Plato's chameleon eyes ogle me. Graceland epiphany, epic heart moment. Passion turns grunge grind work into play. Back in Miami, a nifty bookstore lap danced Gibran into my hands. Work is love made visible. And if you can't work with love, but only with distaste, it is better that you should leave your work and sit at the gate of the temple and take alms of the people who work with joy. So, Plato, my industry is being a poet. South Beach, struck of buffed bronze honey buns, Robert Frost leaned in and whispered, to be a poet is a condition, not a profession. First, third conditionals apply. Our industry is to embrace our grunge grind condition with passionate panache. End poem. All right, Ben.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. Histrionics. That's not the study of history. What is that, the removal of history?
No, histrionics is when you go gaga, gog wild over something, having a hissy fit because histrionics.
Oh, okay.
Like
the, okay,
like,
cool.
Like today's new staple. Whee! That's histrionic.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I have to say, as always, I'm very impressed with Eric's writing. I like how, as he always has such great alliteration, this one is quite the trip because while he uses straightforward language there's a very surreal, dreamlike quality to it, in the idea of having that conversation with famous figures throughout history, almost like coming to life. I really like Socrates materialized next to me, where I admired such buff bronze devotion. Dandy doppelganger, he always pounces on me when least expected. You know, to me, within some of the vines, that one and some of the other ones, you know, there's this idea of turning historical figures into more of heroes than they were ever meant to be. I like how this has that kind of conversational tone, where it's almost like the idea of somebody talking to themselves. I like the questioning, defining my passion, I guess. Ever read Khalil Gibran, Greasy Plato's Chameleon Eyes, All Gold Me? Now that's quite a line. Greasy Plato's Chameleon Eyes, ogled me. And then I like how at the end, because it's almost like the idea of philosophers and poets are both condemned throughout history as being people who don't work. But in the end, there's that nod that to truly be a poet, to truly form your craft, you have to put work into it. It's not just a free ride. So a wonderful, thoughtful, and clever write, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. All right, many moons ago. So this hits on that notion of a trip back in 94, one that was eye-opening, so to speak. The thought with the sculpture itself just offers up a motif, the bronze, the color, and the thought of what's exposed, the muscularity. That's where the angle comes in with the quandary foundry, alchemized blood, sweat, and tears. That idea of something being built back so beautifully. The idea of Socrates, it's on that idea of teacher and him being student, offers him up as a dandy doppelganger. The thought of I admire such bronze, buff bronze devotion. Now, that hits on where he was. Let's see. You got Miami, you've got Houston, San Francisco, Sacramento, Plymouth, Memphis, and so on. So it was a full, well-rounded trip. Took in a lot of things, including truck stops. So, but that thought with the bronze angle hits on both Miami Beach and San Francisco as what you find in those arenas on the beaches near the shores, buff bronzed bodies, not just statues themselves, but the reality to the extraordinaire of what's being found. And because he also hits on Anthony Hopkins lookalike, he cleared his throat. I see you're still learning, student. More like observing the merits of hard work. That kind of hits on the notion of an intonation of how bodies get to be that. They get to be that way through hard work for the most part. But I was intrigued with the fact that he offered up Anthony Hopkins. Because when you hit on that, the first thing you think about is Hannibal. And there's a note of a little bit darkness in there. Then the thought, he offers up that darkness, then something a little lighter, like a buster. A happy, Dizzy Gillespie kind of fellow, one-man band extraordinaire. And, of course, he offers up the thought with the fedora on the asphalt, dollars, dimes, even pennies thrown in as a cultural invitation. Suave smile mechanics, smite histrionics. Again, there's that notation of looking at smiling, and anybody's got a touch of histrionics. Hey, a smile always works in belaying someone's antagonistic views, so to speak. What else we got? I get the idea. The Khalil Gibran is actually how it's pronounced. He was a philosopher. So Josh, that ends with Socrates. And greasy Plato's chameleon eyes ogled me. Then something a little darker again. Graceland epiphany, epic heart moment. Passion turns grunge grind work into play. So we're walking into a little bit of sensuality as well. Nifty bookstore lap dance, the Chevron with my hands. Again, notations of the exploration and the finding of a number of angles across the trip and across the world from since Eric is South African. So this would have been an eye-opening visit across the country. And he probably, since the Europeans in South Africa, they take long vacations, probably a two, maybe a three-month journey from Miami, clear across to San Francisco, up to the Redwoods, and then over to Memphis and back home again. So the idea in that last one is kind of the draw of where he came full circle and where he sits now. To be a poet is a condition, not a profession. First, second, and third conditionals apply. Our industry is to embrace our grunge grind condition with passionate panache, the idea of offering up the beauty, the ugliness, and even the dark as well as the light, full circle.
Well, I have to say that was a whole hell of a lot of thorough observations there. I really like how you touched upon the different personalities that came out in the different stanzas, like the Anthony Hopkins and Dizzy Gillespie. And from what I remember about Eric's writing and from what I know about him through his poetry, he's done quite a bit of traveling in his life.
Yes, he has. Yeah, he did the what was that that thing in for the last show at the football arena in London. He did he dropped that in. He did the for the stage. Elton John was there and a bunch of everybody else. Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Oh, look at that. He managed to put a SoundCloud in. Oh, sorry about that, Eric. Unfortunately, it's too late to get it put in the studio. But thank you for letting us know. Good to see you. All right.
Pee-wee's dueling.
Pee-wee said he couldn't call it. Pee-wee said he couldn't call in because he has bad cell reception. And I said that Pee-wee won't call in because he's scared of me. And so he's throwing down the gauntlet and and challenging me to a duel.
And he took the glove off first instead of hitting you with his hand with the glove.
Now slap him upside the head with a rubber chicken.
Removing the glove and using the glove itself was more of an insult. Why? Because it's a light tap instead of a full slap.
Oh, too funny. But yeah, great comments there. And all right, well, up next we have Cleaner Bin by Peter Solway, and it goes like this. Polishing day room with overtime, making Lino shine. Send the old folks skating off for hip replacement, limb revolting. No cruise to Bali for barrel, shouted by rich uncle, once rumored to be same bed couple, her fall beyond repairable, nor Father Christmas in the mall, this festive time of goodwill for ailments. AI children fondle, plastered around middle. Bracelet ankle, a pedophile, another story of slippery morals, old fellows and balls eternal, ailing Al missing more than present giving bones of slippery rubbing, lasted laptop opening. That evil cleaner been gone, slippery Samson as biblically known, touring the nursing home, Deeming doing rounds with racket of overtime, polishing danger zones, grinning and moving on, no need for Jim. Brother, a specialist surgeon who deals with elderly bones, but looks like Jack Nicholson without green mask on, charges a fortune, I reckon, cleaner sibling getting a cut for certain, end poem.
Great read. Yeah, thank you very much. There's a whole lot there. Some of it's funny. Polishing day room with overtime, making Lino shine, send the old folks skating off for a hit replacement, limb rebolding. A little intonation of, yeah, I grease the balls in this old folks home just so I can watch him go. Then the inference, Beryl and the rich uncle, first of all, beyond repairable. So he's walking down a little different line. Nor Father Christmas in the mall. For ailing Al, children fondle, plastered around middle. Again, bracelet ankle of pedophile. Walking down that slope of what you do wrong is where we all fall. And then the evil cleaner, Slippery Samson, kind of slipping into the polishing danger zones, grinning, then moving on, no need for Jim. Kind of hits on that notion of taking on those who are comatose, so to speak. A specialist surgeon who deals with elderly bones. But looks like Jack Nicholson without green mask on. And that bottom end, cleaner sibling getting a cut for certain, offers up that notion that the doctor is sending along these newbies into the nursing home environment. One's paying off the other, or they're offering up a full three-ring circus of their ideals, and none of it are good.
Absolutely. Oh, I enjoyed this one. I have to wonder, though, if Peter's family has recently put him in a nursing home or something, because I've noticed with his poetry lately, he's been very obsessed with throwing in lines about nursing homes and assisted living homes. So there's got to be something going on, you would think. Either that or he's just obsessed with the idea of old people. You know, I really, as always, his cultural references, you know, are just great, great fun. There is definitely a darkness to this, right? You know, I like how this is about. It's got that message of, you know, that people that get away with things. You know, I like the evil cleaner, been and gone, Slippery Samson is biblically known, touring the nursing homes, demon doing rounds with racket of overtime polishing danger zones, grinning then moving on, no need for Jim. I don't know, for some reason, it brings to mind the idea of, like, if a Nazi was in a nursing home, you know, if a child molester was in a nursing home, would you still see them as the evil they were, or and possibly still are, or would there be that idea of seeing them as harmless, you know, and because of their age? You know, just like you said, there is some definite, like, humor to this dark and twisted, the imagery of Jack Nicholson without green mask on. I don't know, whenever I think of Jack Nicholson, I automatically think of the scene from The Shining, here's Johnny. You know, I don't know. Again, we got another clever write. I like nor Father Christmas in the mall, this festive time of goodwill. I thought that was AI, but that's Al. Is that Al or AI?
Al.
Ah, okay. See, I was still thinking about AI from Pee-wee's poem a few poems back. But, yeah, no, I like how this speaks on those that you think are innocent aren't necessarily as innocent as you think they are, if that makes sense. That was kind of talking in a circle, but oh well. Anyways, excellent write and very well done.
All right, what's up next?
All right, that is a good question. All right, I will grab the next one. And
do.
Up next we have
took her for a walk down by the distillery. Then we got caught down in the distillery. Poor old Donnie Chesmott.
Bravo, Rex. All right. Up next we have In This Grim Scenario, Evil Wins by M.J. Donnelly. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
In This Grim Scenario, Evil Wins. I am Jay Donnelly. While China grows strong, America slumps, focused on gender, not so much on math. As the job market fades, the Dow Jones jumps. To say the least, to say the least, we have strayed off the path. The price of everything is on the rise. The rich say, oh my, the common folk moan. Politicians snub constituents' cries. Seemingly bothered, they throw them a bone. You will have nothing. And be glad, you hear? The socialists bark in haughty speeches, while God-fearing, hard-working people fear, disgusted as though besieged by leeches. Young people know more about stars these days than they learn about U.S. history. Most sit in class with their minds in a haze, so failure should not be a mystery. Rioting is the norm, looting is a thing, for the lazy do not want to work. As the divas philosophize and sing, strutting and cussing with a profane twerk. If it feels good, do it, liberals cry, as many church pews today gather dust. I feel deep in my soul the end is nigh, as into wild, sordid times we are thrust. They say, bad is good, and good things are bad. As the revolving door of justice spins, the state of affairs is so very sad. In this grim scenario, evil wins. And pause. All right, what you got?
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. I like MJ Donnelly's straightforward style, his rhyme and flow, the way he speaks his mind. There's definitely stuff I have to agree in here and can pick out as favorites. I particularly like the price of everything is on the rise, the rich say, oh my, the common folk moan, politicians snub, constituents cry, seemingly bothered, they throw them a bone. I particularly like that line about throwing them a bone because I feel like that's always been part of political agenda, and even media agenda is to throw those bones, throw around those distractions so that people won't focus on the important issues. I really like young people know more about stars these days than they learn about U.S. history, most in class with their minds in a haze, so failure should not be a mystery. I think he makes some really good points there about the whole idea that there's having young people more focused on the rich and the famous rather than those who have created a path in history. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said. He's not wrong here. the underlying motif is we've been sold out. Because when we started, the idea was not to tax the people with unnecessary thoughts. The idea was the operation of the government itself would come in levies against imported goods, and that would be what would run the country. And but we've gone way past that since, what's it now, 1913, the big change in how we did banking. Then in 1971, with the taking away of our base unit, the strength behind the dollar, gold, and then running it up as oil, that saw our first huge jump in the evolution of printing money on demand. And the fact that it's pretty much useless now. The dollar is pitiful. We are looked on across the world as basically fools who give more shit about genderism than the reality of the other 98% of the population of the world. And the funny thing is, it ain't just happening here. We're seen as that biggest nub because if America falls, the world goes with it. So there is that idea of when hell arises, if hell arises, it'll be because we didn't stand up to make that noted voice of, you know what, the buck stops here, and y'all need to get the fuck off the planet. And that includes these huge manipulative mega industries that actually control everything. That includes China. That includes everywhere else. You've got all these people that are playing games. And if Germany don't get their shit together this winter, there's going to be a whole lot of frozen dead people over there, not to mention the rest of Europe. If you think you can play games with energy, hey, we're going green. Yeah, green don't come in wintertime, fools. There ain't no sun. There ain't no wind. And you ain't got no electricity. Nor heat.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Great comment, Rex. All right. Up next, we have Crime and Remorse by Gerald E. Green. And this is the one recording we have for tonight. Well, not counting Eric's, I got in too late. But, so here we go.
Hi. Today's poem is Crime and Remorse. The miscreant who follows a checkered and unsteady course of heinous and violent crime involving the blunt use of force spends more time in prison for no other reason than showing no guilt or remorse. The crafty ones know how to act in courtrooms where stern judges reign. With tears in each eye, they mumble and cry, confessing as if they're in pain. They say they are sorry, deserving of pity, when wearing a jumpsuit and chain. The one in the robe is not fooled, while families consider the plea, accepting remorse as if it were time behind prison bars with no key. Each sentence is final and ended with gavel. The thug will no longer be free. But sometimes the judges are fooled, accepting the act as sincere, and lower the time for the crime due to the words that they hear. Because they're good actors while using these factors, the guilty resume their career. End poem.
Great read there, Gerald. Thank you for the sound card. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, I like this one. We got a great lineup of poetry tonight. I like how this touches on the idea that, some people, think will commit the crime believing that they can get away with it if they put on a great performance. And I like how he shows us two examples, that there are those judges who will not be fooled, and there are those judges who will be fooled. And I thought the end lines were particularly powerful with the because they're good actors while using these factors, the guilty resume their career. And it really touches on the idea of how the idea of if you can be convincing with your facade or even if you can grease the right palms, even though he doesn't specifically say that, I kind of, it brings me that idea to my mind, is the idea if you can, you know, grease the right palms, you can more readily get away with something. I really like the flow of the lines. The crafty ones know how to act in courtrooms where stern judges reign. With tears in each eye, they mumble and cry, confessing as if they're in pain. And then the idea of, you know, that they're really, truly only sorry once the jumpsuit and the chain are on. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Payne. It paints the double-tiered angle well. Sometimes judges are fooled. I don't buy into that. Judges aren't stupid. They understand the law, and they also understand the fact that, hey, if you're well-heeled, you will not spend the same amount of time behind bars, if at all, as the miscreant who is actually doesn't give a rat's ass. Just because you're another kind of sociopath that knows how to play the game doesn't mean you're any less responsible or will be a better person than the one you put away for life. So the idea in this is if you're going to do the crime, you better do the time and you better do it equally. Because we got way too many pieces of garbage rolling out there who actually shouldn't deserve to be loose.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's just a fact of life, you know, that you, as you said, you do the crime, you should pay the time. All right, ready for the next poem?
Yowza. What we got?
All right, well, up next we have Two of a Kind by Poetic Creation, and it goes like this. Rolled beside the squirrel for his kind groomed first, had just one full moon fell, splendor is the new dawn. Worse yet, the fallen fawn, bloody nose gasping, raspy is the sound of tragedy, years later appalled, I'm left gasping. Cannot I dance with this one, may I not taste it wrath. My eyes bleed, but no one sees. Final heave, lungs collapse. Bloody jeans at the knees, deer mourn the dead. Alongside the train tracks, a stranger passes. Yet riled, they will not flee. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And, this kind of reminds me of your squirrel, the squirrels you've got sitting in the freezer right now. I know it's about nature and hits on that angle, but there is I can look at it as a metaphor for what it is to the fallen fawn being children. The thought of squirrel is those who run around trying to get things done or try to look for that new angle of what they want. The thought of wrath kind of hits that notion of seeing but being unable to do something about it. And then the bloody jeans at the knees, deer mourn the dead, the mother, obviously, alongside the train tracks, a stranger passes by, yet riled, they will not flee. The thought, yet riled, they will not flee, hits that thought of a deer being caught in the headlights, that moment where you're frozen in the moment. You know what's going on, but you don't do anything about it, and you don't run because of it either. So there's kind of that years later, appalled, I'm left gasping. There's kind of a note to understanding something in the moment, and years later, the idea is, what the hell? Why didn't I do something?
Yep. Yeah, I like that thought. The idea of looking back in years later thinking, why the hell didn't I do something? And, you know, it's, I had to laugh at the first part of your comment because, honest to goodness, between the squirrel that we have in the squirrels we have in the freezer, the deer we have in the freezer, and the fact that I live by railroad, right by railroad tracks, I swear to goodness, I actually thought perhaps PC was writing a poem about me. But no, that cracked me up. But yeah, no, you make some really good points there. I like that this touches on the idea of violence and how it affects all creation and how it affects it affects nature, it affects people. A very strong visceral imagery, and I like, as you were mentioning, about the idea of regret. You know, the visceral imagery especially comes through with worse yet the fallen fawn, bloody nose, gaping, raspy as the sound of tragedy. Years later, appalled, I'm left gasping. Bloody jeans on the knees, deer mourn the dead alongside the train tracks. A stranger passes, yet riled, they will not flee. I like the end line, yet riled, they will not flee, because it gives food for thought and the idea that we don't always learn from the people and situations that have mistreated us. So, you know, very cool write and very well done. It also makes me think, I saw a couple's costume today where the guy was wearing a deer costume and the woman's costume was like a road with car headlights, and the car headlights were placed right where her breasts were. And of course, the guy in the deer costume was like staring right at the headlights. So it was like a deer caught in the headlights. And I will have you know that as far as relationship goals, that is one of mine, to find somebody who will do a deer in the headlights costume with me.
I think you piqued Pee-wee's his notion there. Sounds interesting.
Oh, man. All right, well. Let's see what we got next. And up next, we have The Billboard Tree by Omega. What is, I know it's Omega something, or maybe it's just Omega.
Omega AM.
What's that? Oh, Omega,
Omega
AM. Yeah. Yes. And go ahead and give that a read for us, Rex.
The Billboard Tree by Omega AM. The billboard wet green leaves. The breeze was quiet, yet the tree seemed disheveled. Her life waited for the tree to grow. The day seemed quiet in its topaz way. Mountains drifted away in their repose. The tree seemed to smile with a tear rolling down. Leaves do not have a choice, but it articulates the wind swirling cottonwoods at dusk. Mountains on the canyon's other side, onrush of bellows, moonlight is here. I shad wait for my billboard tree to go. It will be as tall as can be, whilst the air smells so young to me. End poem. And I should have caught that. I think the shad's supposed to be I shall. But that's okay. What do you think?
Well, you, that's why it's people's jobs to catch their own mistakes. But it was a great read. He's actually, or he, she, I apologize for not knowing 100% for sure. I'm guessing must be she from the picture. You know, I like that they were the first one to take the first prompt, which was, I think that I shall never see a billboard lovely as a tree, perhaps unless the billboards fall I'll never see a tree at all. And I like that he took this in the direction of almost like using one's imagination, because the reality offered up is just not pleasant. I really like the use of the word topaz. The days seem quiet in its topaz way. Mountains drifted away in their repose. The trees seem to smile with a tear rolling down. Leaves do not have a choice, but it articulates the wind swirling cottonwoods at dusk. I really like that imagery, and I like the whole idea of the metaphor of the leaves representing people who don't find that they have it, you know, that just kind of go along with what, where the wind is guiding them, unfortunately, for better or for worse. And there's a certain kind of childlike innocence about the end line, in that, you know, I shall wait for my billboard tree to grow. It'll be as tall as can be, whilst the air smells so young to me. There's almost this, like, in the voice of a story told in the voice of someone who's naive to the realities of life. So, excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I think the brightness of the metaphor, she being the billboard, whereas the offering of living in an arena where you've got billboards and nothing but, there's no life real around it except that which you can imagine. So, the billboard, wet green leaves, tears of lost hope. The breeze was quiet, the trees seemed disheveled. Again, that sort of self-containment. The day seemed quiet in its topaz way. There's an offering because of the picture itself, almost a little bit of topaz blue. But the mountains drift away in their repose. The trees seem to smile with a tear rolling down. There is a notion of it. You look at that. It's a single tree on a background, seemingly green grass in front and a seemingly blue sky in the back. Yet it's a fake. It's just something to give you a thought to that which might be, but you're not actually within this arena itself. It's almost as if you're looking from a future angle and there's nothing left. And this is what gives you an idea of what life once was like. And the thought, I shall wait for my billboard tree to grow. It will be as tall as can be, whilst the air smells so young to me. There's the air smelling so young, it hints at hope. But that tree is never going to grow because it's sitting on the billboard itself. And that hope comes with the thought of being able to actually enrich oneself by being in a pasture such as that, but understanding that might be a fait accompli, not possible.
Very cool. Henry says that he lives directly on top of the line, eastern in half of the house and central in the other half. Can you imagine that?
The house must be sideways.
Oh, man. All right. So, up next, we have You Messed Up by Julie Buck. And it goes like this. I never meant to sprout horns or to grow a forked tongue. I never ever thought I wouldn't always be young. Screw the memories, taste like tears to me. I'd rather walk away still able to stand on my own than to let you keep leading me astray. You messed up and I followed. And though misery may sometimes love company, my anger prefers solitude. I don't believe in people, fairness, or friends, but I believe in pain. There is danger on displaying empathy to a stranger. That skull and crossbones warning emits from your pores like a red flag stuck on shameless debris. You happy, soulless bastard. Brr, it's cold in here. No, that'd be conscience carrying me. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, let's see. Well, good intentions. Wrong roads are paved with good intentions. That kind of hit on that with the first stanza. I never ever thought I wouldn't always be young. Yeah, the perils of youth. Yeah, we think we're never going to die and we're never getting old. And we know everything at the tender age of 20. I'd rather walk away still able to stand on my own than to let you keep leading me astray. Kind of paints a nice picture of, yep, I swallowed that lock, stock, and barrel, and I either have to pay for it, or I can move on. Then the idea, you messed up, yes, and I followed. And though misery may sometimes let come in my anger for its solitary, though the anger is ruling at the moment, and it's time to actually hit that note. But the pain comes with it. I don't believe in people, fairness, or friends, but I believe in pain. That kind of hits on the note of a life of struggle. And yes, there is danger in displaying empathy to a stranger. You don't know what you're getting into. But I do like the thought, you happy, soulless bastard. Brr, is it cold in here? Yeah, you know what? Sometimes a little chill wakes up with a nice tint of moisture that kicks you in the ass and reminds you, yeah, you're still alive now, and you haven't gone down to hell yet. So, the conscience is alive. What about you?
Yeah, I really like that thought, and I have to agree, there is this whole idea of someone who decides to keep their conscience, who refuses to walk down the same path as somebody else. As always, you've got edgy, hard-hitting lines. I really like, I'd rather walk away still able to stand on my own than to let you keep leading me astray. I like the idea of somebody learning to stand on their own two feet, you know, even if it is later in life. Yeah, I particularly like the line, the stanza after that, though, with the idea of you messed up and I followed, and so misery may sometimes love company. My anger prefers solitude. Because of the fact that she capitalized misery, it makes me think of the Stephen King book and the movie that the book is based after, and the idea of the woman who wanted the company of the author that she so admired and was willing to hobble him. But, you know, here we have somebody who doesn't want to have company. So I thought that was a particularly clever stanza, and I could be off in my thinking of it, but that's what came to mind. And I like the awareness that there is danger in displaying empathy to a stranger. You know, and that's so true, but at the same time, you know, we don't want to give up on being kind to people, but you have to kind of approach the idea of acts of kindness with common sense and caution. So excellent write and very well done.
All right. Where would you like to go next?
All right. Up next, we have Slippery Slope by Weaver of Dreams. And Rex, go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Right. No soundboard. That's got to be a little bit of an oddity. Slippery Slope by Weaver of Dreams. I have deadened the noises in my head. No, not voices, just discordant sounds. By building, brick by brick, a dividing wall between myself and whatever lurks without. Although it might be a language unknown to me, still the sibilant, slimy, liquid tones are menacing. A frisson of fear warns me to take care, beware. More than ever, trust not, fear even the familiar. Against my own advice, I attempt to reach out into the astral plane. I sense a seething storm of doubt and anger. Without thought, I hurl a piece of shard of energy into the maelstrom. Too late. I recognized the essence of my friend who'd suffered for years from night terrors. If she'd told me what to expect, I wouldn't have struck out in my defense, leaving her catatonic.
Breathe there, Rat. I like the way Weaver. Oh, what's that?
Yeah. Life is not being told the magic once before. Okay.
Yeah, I like the way Weaver can tell a story and have a lesson in it. I like that this is about, you know, not being aware to what's beyond the normal realm of thinking. I like the imagery in by building brick by brick a dividing wall between myself and whatever lurks without. You know, there's wonderful, creepy lines. I also really like, against my own advice, I attempt to reach out into the astral plane. I sense a seething storm of doubt and anger without thought. I hurl a piercing shard of energy into the maelstrom. You know, this is wonderful, dark imagery and an excellent ending that speaks on the consequences of playing with those things that we don't understand. So, excellent write and very well done. And I like the whole creepy picture she's got going on there. Very cool.
I'm going to walk this a little different. The thought within this, against my own advice, I tend to reach out. And too late, I recognize the essence of my friend. Kind of hits on that notion of taking somebody in without understanding what the predicament is that you have to take her in to begin with. And when you find her crawling into your room, so to speak, for one reason or another, maybe she's just sleepwalking, it's kind of that notion of you wake up, you hear a sound, you think somebody's broken in, and all of a sudden, you just killed them. So
huh.
That's where I'm coming from.
Well, that is very interesting. I like that.
All right. We got time for at least one more.
We got two left on the board. So we might as well just finish them both, even if we go a couple minutes over.
All right.
So up next we have Blood Poem by Jim Bellamy. And it goes like this. The date when man must rape his death consumes the lie subsumed by breath. I count the metric foot and live for poetry. I count when walking, these poems talking. I write the words man must not hear. Cat on the mat must kill the red rat. The man inside the field disputes his greenest yield. The bat proves the dream which rests in death's church. Firework, firework. Time, why fiddle with death's middle? Terror cannot rise against its dead guise. Schizoid, splitzoid, GVGI, end poem.
Great read, Dan. Thank you very much. And Blood Poem, with a question mark to open up, kind of offers up a different thought, but it doesn't really walk that way. It hits on the idea of I count when walking these poems talking. I write the words men must not hear. The cat on the mat must kill the rat. The duality of function. The cat, yeah, it's got to kill the red rat. The man inside the field disputes his greenest yield. Again, a noted fact, and yet there's a question to it. The bat proves a dream which rests in death's church. Yeah. Okay. Do we go vampiric on that? Or is it just the fact that bats like belfries, where bells toll, so to speak, the idea of death and consumption. Man consumes man. Earth consumes man. And time, why fiddle with death's middle? Again, that note, the pointed note. If you're busy worrying about death, with the time you've got, then you're not actually living. So you're already consumed with death. And schizoid, splitzoid kind of hits at the notion of If you're thinking on that note alone, it will turn you schizoid, and it offers up the split-throat angle. It's the schizophrenia becoming two people. So you've walked off one ledge into another, so to speak. And, hey, if you're going to play with things, offer up that which is, as opposed to, hey, it's just the story to tell. What do you think?
Great comment there, Rex. Yeah, I like the rhyme to this, but how it doesn't rhyme throughout the whole thing. So there's kind of almost this wonderful chaotic feel to it. I like that blood poem is put into a question with the idea that blood is both a representative of life and death, and the question being, which is this poem? I did like those lines, the cat on the mat must kill the red rat. I feel like that speaks on the whole idea of getting up off your ass and taking care of those things that need to be taken care of. I also really liked, the bat proves the dream which rests in death's church. I think of bats in the belfry, that phrase, and the idea of there's almost that idea of the loop of insanity within those lines. And terror cannot rise against dead guys. There is a struggle between our obsession with our death and our need to continue living because we fear the end. So excellent write and very well done.
All right. Last one coming up.
All right. And our last poem for the night is Reflections on Nice Breaking by Keith Palethorpe. And Rex, go ahead and give that a read for us, please.
Reflections on Nice Breaking by Keith Palethorpe. Candy is fattening, but liquor is flattening. We never foresee that the hatches need battening. A bird in the hand is worth less than a bush. All hands need to hustle when shove comes to push. The length of his legs were the absolute best. They both reached the ground where they came to rest. And Paul. Oh,
that was a good redirection.
You're lucky.
This one was just absolutely perfect for a Ogden Nash contest. You know, he's got his brevity, wonderful rhyme and flow, great humor, especially at the end. I love that part. The length of his legs were the absolute best. They both reached the ground and they came to rest. You know, no complaints there. As long as your legs reach the ground, then, hey, life is good. So excellent fun write and very well done.
Yeah, it's a nice reflective note of the picture, too. Passed out Kermit the Frog with bottles of booze all around, lying on a wooden little bench. Hey, I wonder if that book he's reading, well, not a book reading, hey, I wonder if the bird that he doesn't worry about, hey, when push comes to shove, I'm not getting up because I'm at rest and happy. Drunken green.
Exactly. Well, great show tonight, Rex.
Absolutely. It was a fun evening, especially a touch of humor to finish. So thank you very much. And Pee-wee, Hats, thank you very much for hanging out on the board. And Phil for dropping in for a little while to keep us company. And we shall do this again next week. Oh, next week we're doing. Is it next week? Yes, next week we will be
bringing
around our lead up to Halloween. So if you haven't seen it yet, come and play Halloween week. It's going to be a lot of laughs and a lot of howls and a lot of fun.
Oh, for sure. That's going to be a great week. I'm looking forward to that. All right. Have a good night.
Good night, everyone. Thank you very much. And we'll do this again next Tuesday morning.